702. 702. On 92.7 and 106 FM. Streaming on 702.co.za, the 702 app, and on DSTV channel 856.
8 minutes after 12. Dumelang, good afternoon. You're on 702 and Cape Talk with myself, Clement Manyatela, until 1 p.m. as we run through the important stories you need to know about this afternoon. Remember, you're always welcome to connect and engage with me on 011-883-0702 in Cape Town, 021-446-0567. Your SMSs can be sent to 31702 and 31567, and your WhatsApp voice notes, I love hearing them, so please send them to 072-702-1702. Coming up, there's news coming in about a protest involving drivers for the e-hailing service. Apparently, some roads have been blocked and the drivers have split themselves. We'll tell you more in a short while. Also, Cabinet has approved the Employment Equity Amendment Bill. We'll look at how effective it's going to be in accelerating transformation in the workplace because, wow, the pace is so slow. Plus, what shameful behavior by members of parliament yesterday. The ANC and the EFF will come on the show and reflect on what transpired in parliament yesterday. And I see that the lawyers representing EFF leader Julius Malema's wife, Mantua, have now sent that ANC MP, Boy Mamabolo, a letter demanding that he retract his accusations of domestic abuse. I'll read you that lawyer's letter also in a short while. So all of this and more in this hour.
Connect. Engage. Change. This is 702. This is 702. For the curious.
So there's a protest currently underway now involving drivers of the e-hailing services. We understand that it's Uber and Taxify drivers, and apparently in some parts of Johannesburg, they've been blocking roads. And please, if you have been affected on the roads or you are an Uber driver, you are part of the protest, give me a call on 011-883-0702, or you can send me that voice note and explain what is happening, what have you been able to see on 072-702-1702. Let's now speak to Sipho, who is an Uber driver and taking part in that protest. Sipho, good afternoon to you. Thank you so much for your time. What is the protest about?
The protest is about Uber and Bolt e-hailing drivers.
What are your concerns?
Our concerns, first of all, it's a violence within, between the taxi association and Israel, and it's spreading a bit by bit. We can't work in Israel, which is Chris Hani Mall, it's in Katlehong, Spreadview, Tokoza, Katlehong, all those areas in Israel. We can't work there. We're being shot, beaten up by taxi drivers, and then again, it's about the abuse that we get from our Bolt and Uber, more especially Bolt. The commission that they are taking is too high. There's a lot of promotions that they are running that are affecting us as the drivers, eating our petrol. I mean, there's a lot, and they can't even listen to us when we try to speak to them.
So where are you heading to? Because I understand that you're split yourselves. There's one at Zoo Lake. My understanding is that some drivers are heading towards Sandton right now. Where are you heading to? Are you going to be submitting a memorandum? And what are your demands?
Yes, we were supposed to be submitting the memorandum in Sandton, Cramerville. Actually, we're supposed to meet all of us in Zoo Lake. So the police came and disrupted us. They started shooting at us while we were not fighting. So they made some other groups split so that it made two groups and three groups. But some of us, we are in the Bolt and Uber offices right now. But I heard that they've been closed and they're not nowhere to be found.
What are you demanding? What action do you want taken?
We want Bolt and Uber to take responsibility for our safety. Like I said, we are being robbed every day. There's nothing they are doing. We can report that, and then they can't even trace their client that has robbed us, you know. And then they can't even try to talk or negotiate or whatever that they have to do with the taxi association in the Israel. Taxi association abuses us every day. Every day. You can't work that. Even if you are just passing with your girlfriend, your mom, or even just driving alone, if they can see that it's a sedan car, they will stop you and search you and take your phone. If they found the Uber or Bolt app, they will harass you. They demand 2.5. We've been taking 2.5 almost every day.
All right. Sipho, thank you so much for speaking to us about what this protest is about. Let's go to Wayne Minar now, who's a JMPD spokesperson. Wayne, good afternoon to you. How have the roads been affected by this protest?
Good afternoon. Yes, no, traffic flow has been affected negatively. There's congestion on the Maikwan North now between Greyston and Marlborough. So with the majority of the protesters moving out or in the off-ramp now at Marlborough going towards Sandton, with the group initially from the Zulik area, that's where they had started. And then they got onto John Smuts Avenue and then onto the freeway north in a little northerly direction.
All right, Wayne Minar, thank you so much for that quick update on how the roads are being affected. And if you're being affected, you've seen where they are and you have managed to drive around where some have blocked those roads, please give us a call on 011-883-0702. Wayne Minar, JMPD spokesperson, I appreciate your time. 13 minutes after 12.
702 for the curious. Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
All right, let's go to Parliament now, where Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan has appeared before the joint standing of the joint sitting, in fact, of the Standing Committee on Public Accounts and the Committee of Public Enterprises in Parliament, talking SAA. And I mean, recently government has been criticized for interfering in the business rescue process at this troubled airline. Remember, even the president spoke out against that decision by the rescue practitioners to cancel all domestic flights except the Johannesburg Cape Town route, with government agreeing with unions that this would impact negatively on the economy and lead to job losses. EWN reporter Baba Lendenza was listening through that appearance by the Public Enterprises Minister in that committee. Baba, look, good afternoon. Thanks for your time. What update has the minister given on that rescue process at SAA?
Yes, hi, Clement. The minister basically told the members of the two committees that were sitting today that, you know, the business rescue practitioners are still busy formulating the, you know, the business rescue plan. So they are, you know, currently doing these, you know, various investigations on how to, you know, approach the airline. So the practitioners themselves, you know, members of the committee wanted to actually hear from the business rescue practitioners who are, you know, Mongani Ngasana was one of them, was there, accompanied by the joint rescue practitioner, Sivir Dongwana. But they didn't utter a word because, you know, the minister said, no, he would take the questions. They are still busy with the plan. Once they are done with that plan, it will become a public document. And it will be at that point where, you know, the business rescue practitioners, you know, can answer direct questions from members of parliament, you know, in a public setting. But he did, you know, say that business rescue is ongoing. But, you know, liquidation is a last resort, because liquidation was an option put on the table. But they figured that liquidation, you know, would lead to a lot of, you know, job losses. And that was a dire consequence that the minister says they're trying to prevent, which is why this rescue operation is so important, you know, to save not only the airline, but also those employed by the airline.
Yeah. Have they said anything about the, you know, SAA's financial records? Because the troubled airline has really been struggling to submit their financial records for some time now.
Yes, indeed. I mean, you know, at the beginning of the meeting and at the end of the meeting, that did become an issue. Annual financial statements, a number of MPs, you know, from all parties raised the issue of the AFS that has not been tabled since the 2016-2017 financial year. But the minister says, you know, there is a legal, you know, the EDMs, called it a loophole, you know, where, you know, if you feel that the business is not doing very well and it's under business rescue, you know, there's really nothing forcing you to table these annual financial statements. You can table them once, you know, you are satisfied that the business is no longer a going concern and, you know, the business rescue is, in fact, working. So the minister is giving an assurance that, you know, these annual financial statements are really not being held back deliberately by SAA or the shareholder. It's just a matter of the business rescue process that is, you know, keeping them at bay.
Baba Lendenza, thank you so much for your time. EWN reporter there. All right, coming up, we discuss with the EFF and the ANC what transpired in Parliament yesterday and how embarrassed are they, if they are, about the behavior of their MPs. It's 17 minutes after 12.
702. WhatsApp us now on 072-702-1702.
Yeah, good day, Clemens. My name is Clarence. I'm right here in Horton next to Mandela Foundation. The freeway there by M1 has actually been closed. They are diverting traffic onto Central passing through Mandela. Uber drivers and taxi drivers, I believe, actually are protesting. So the freeway has been closed on that side of Houghton.
702 for the curious. Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
All right, let's discuss what happened in Parliament yesterday. The Star newspaper describes it on their front page as a house of chaos. The Citizen newspaper calls it a house of insults. I'm sure my colleague Eusebius would call it a house of toddlers. I don't know how you would call it, but what transpired was childish, it was chaotic, it was insensitive, it was unparliamentary, whatever that means. Some MPs used gender-based violence to settle political scores. And it didn't start with the EFF leader, Julius Malema. It started last week already with ANC MP Boy Mamabolo when he fired the first salvo. And Speaker Thandi Modise summed it up at the end of yesterday's proceedings that, and I quote, "We were given the responsibility to protect, to guide, to nurture, and we have failed." And this politicization of gender-based violence didn't only find expression in Parliament. Remember just before the ANC conference in 2017, the ANC Women's League president, Bathabile Dlamini, said this about then-President Cyril Ramaphosa.
"The issue of violence against women is the issue that must unite all women. It's an issue where we should take a stand, and we must not be pushed into the corner to support some and not support the others. We are born again. U comrade deputy president of the ANC u decidile ukhuluma, but he spoke about comrade Jacob Zuma, and we want to say, comrade Cyril, comrade deputy president, if you want to speak out about violence against women and children, talk about yourself. You must open up. And kumnandi, because you said you know how difficult it is for a woman to take a stand on this issue, and you too have the experience."
So it's this idea of using sexual violence as a tool and politicians being passionate about it during conferences and political debates, and it's just so distasteful. You can share your thoughts on what transpired yesterday and what has really become this trend of using gender-based violence for political objections and not justice. Or is the problem that maybe we expect too much from these politicians? I don't know, but I'll take your thoughts on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Let's speak to the ANC now and speak to the spokesperson of the party, Pule Mabe. Mr. Mabe, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. You must be embarrassed by the behavior of your MPs yesterday.
Good day and good day to your listeners, Clement. Sorry, I had to leave a meeting of the African National Congress just to lead the political management committee meeting today. Of course, we are, and the LG has agreed that we speak to yourselves on this matter, to formally register the concern and discomfort of the African National Congress, because we believe that gender-based violence is such an emotive issue, one that requires all of us.
All right, Pule, I'm going to ask you to please move around, man. The line is not the clearest. I'm going to, you know, take you back to the producer there to try and reestablish that line, because we're really struggling to hear you. And we want to hear what the ANC's position really is on the behavior of those ANC MPs in Parliament yesterday. So let's try speak to Pule Mabe again. Pule, I hope the line is much better right now. I was asking you that as the ANC, how embarrassed are you about the behavior of your MPs yesterday?
Well, thanks, Clement. I was just giving a background before we went off, just indicating that we have our own political management committee meeting this morning. Amongst the issues that we were reflecting upon was, of course, the things that we saw in Parliament. They were quite embarrassing, not befitting of a Parliament, which is supposed to be a place where ideas that must transform society ought to be expressed, articulated upon by all of those who are political, who are public representatives, regardless of which party they represent. It is important that when we are in parliament, we focus our energies on things that are necessary to transform society. You will know that the ANC-led government has already set aside monies, over 1.6 billion rand, to fight the scourge of gender-based violence. It means that there is an urgent need that all of us unite behind finding solutions on this. The ANC Women's League has issued a statement as well today, again registering their own disappointment on the debate that ensued in Parliament. We are calling on all members of Parliament, regardless of which party they represent, to begin carrying forward the responsibility that we are expected to discharge, especially those that are public representatives. Because it is the people of South Africa that has passed their vote to put people in that parliament.
Yeah, how seriously do you take this, Pule? Will you take action against members of parliament like Boy Mamabolo, for instance, and the people who plotted that, his colleagues in the ANC caucus? Because we saw a screenshot purported to be a conversation amongst ANC MPs. No one has come out to say it's not legit, and it even involves your chief whip.
Well, I can tell you now, Clement, that there is a conversation going on in the background in the ANC, and once the African National Congress, especially even at the level of HQ, has had full appreciation of all the facts, we will be able to communicate on the next course of action. We are not taking this matter lightly. It is a matter that requires action on our part. We need to show society that we are serious about this. We cannot allow gender-based violence to be trivialized in that manner. We expect all of our members of parliament, people that the men and women that we've deployed out there, to be responsible, make statements that assist in the construction of the society we want.
All right. Pule Mabe, thank you so much for coming through and stepping out of that meeting and chatting to us. He's the ANC spokesperson. He's promising that there's already a conversation around the behavior of some of those ANC's MPs, like Boy Mamabolo, for instance, and that they're not going to take this matter lying down. So we'll keep watching the ANC to check what action they're going to take against their members like Boy Mamabolo. 27 minutes after 12.
702 for the curious. Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
All right, let's speak to the EFF now. The spokesperson is Vuyani Bambo. Vuyani, good afternoon to you. Thank you so much for speaking to us. I want to first talk about the attorney's letter, the lawyers representing EFF leader Julius Malema's wife, Mantua, having now sent this ANC MP, Boy Mamabolo, a letter demanding that he retract his accusations of domestic violence. You were kind enough to send us this lawyer's letter. Speak to us about that decision there. So this letter has been sent to Boy Mamabolo. What are the demands?
Well, as it's stated there, that letter is obviously on behalf of Mama Malema, who has, out of her own volition, written to the boy who made false accusations to our president and commander-in-chief. So essentially, she has taken a stand. And I think what is mostly interesting in that letter is that she clearly puts it that she does not need his help, and that if there was something like that, she would have gone to the nearest police station. So there is no such a matter. But also what is also important is that Boy Mamabolo was trying to score cheap political points, has effectively harmed and put a cloud over a family that is happy, and he does not take into regard that there are children there that are going to be affected by this when they go to school, who suddenly have to discuss their parents and discuss something which is false. But not only that, in the letter, Mama Malema is asking Boy Mamabolo to retract all these defamatory statements that he has made about Mr. Malema and his family. And if not, she is going to sue him for R1 million. So it's essentially, this is someone who is coming out and saying, please do not use our lives so cheaply, but also do not play with such an important matter like GBV. We know that gender-based violence is a serious issue in this country, which even the leadership of this country, the ANC, has not figured out. So if you take a platform as a member of parliament and play a political football with such a matter, it's not assisting the cause. Mm. It actually cheapens and lessens the gravity of the matter. Mm. So she has taken a bold step, and she's not doing it secretly. She's doing it publicly. Yeah. So we welcome it.
Yeah.
We think it's exemplary, and it also assists in the fight against gender-based violence.
Yeah, and Vianney, I hear you when you say that, you know, it's not desirable for even members of parliament to use that platform to even play politics using gender-based violence. But isn't that what Mr. Malema also did when he responded by accusing President Cyril Ramaphosa of similar allegations?
Not at all. Mr. Malema, the Commander-in-Chief, was simply making it clear to South Africans that he was reminding South Africans that in 2018, he said, I stood up here in this parliament and said, all of us men must start here in this parliament and raise our hands that in the past 25 years, we have never raised our hands against women. We have never abused women. We have never abused children. But today, I stand here on this podium being accused falsely. And remember that I was the person who stood up and said, Mr. President, we hear that you did X, Y, and Z. Can you lead the charge against gender-based violence by voluntarily raising your hand and saying that you never abused your wife? Now, yesterday, he then comes up and said, but you are playing a dangerous game because I have not followed up on the question that I asked the president. That is essentially, so you can't read it out of context. The question arose in 2018 at the sauna. Mm. He raised it. He said, as a fight against gender-based violence, let us be exemplar. Let us take a position in society with which we become the first to raise our hands against the scourge of gender-based violence.
But he only mentioned the victim now, Vianney. Was it not politically convenient for him to do so now? Because Malema didn't call out the president when he found out about these allegations, unless he found out yesterday, especially regarding the late ex-wife of the president.
No, my brother, yesterday became a situation where people must now speak out. The first challenge was that people must voluntarily come out, right? And then yesterday, the ANC took a position, a posture that seeks to unearth. So we followed in the leadership of the ANC by them saying that, no, we want you to account openly in this parliament under oath. Then we said, okay, no problem. President stood up and said, I have never beaten my wife or any other woman for that matter. Okay. Not even my children. I have never raised a hand against my wife or any other women, including my children.
All right.
But Mr. President, since we're on this matter of unearthing our history with women and gender-based violence, I said here in 2018, let us raise our hands. But you, Mr. President, have a history of this. Because now, remember that also what is also important as we advance in our consciousness is that men must take a stand and call each other out when they act against women. So it's important, my brother, that we read it in context, read it outside of context. So to shift blame and put it on President Malem is to undermine and not read what actually happened yesterday, which is a charge which was led by the ANC to humiliate and undermine gender-based violence.
Vianney, thank you so much, man. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but I think I've given you enough time there to make your point. Vianney Pambo, EFF spokesperson. He says, we were following up on the leadership of the ANC, but do you follow on the leadership of the ANC even when the ANC is wrong? Do you give them the taste of their own medicine even when it's wrong?
702. WhatsApp us now on 072-702-1702.
Good afternoon, Clement. This is Mbo. Clement, I have just one question for 702 lenders. Does Julius Malema really strike you as someone who will never lay his hand on a woman or anyone else for that matter? Can we really take his word for it? Think about it, Clement.
Yeah, look, that's a problem though, Mboko, isn't it? That we think people who beat up women look a particular way, right? That, okay, Julius Malema is so passionate, looks very aggressive, and therefore he's the type that beats up women. But what about people that are also sweet? Pastors. People that you would not put in that category of women beaters. Unfortunately, you cannot look at someone and want to suggest they're a woman beater or not. So this thing of looking at looks in order to satisfy ourselves, whether people are abusers or not, is very problematic. Let's go to the line. Sifudi in Randfontein. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Tim Clement. We cannot excuse what happened in Parliament, no matter which way we try to explain it. That's what happened there was very rude. It was a disrespect to the country at large. You cannot be choose who is a human abuser. There are smooth operators who are also vicious.
All right.
Afternoon to you.
Afternoon to you, Sifudi, calling us from Randfontein. And by the way, the producer of the show, Ayanda, was speaking to Boy Mamabolo this morning because we wanted to have him on the show. And he didn't want to come to speak to us. And, you know, his argument was that, you know, that's where defamation will come in because he'll be speaking outside of parliament, outside of his parliamentary privileges. And even though Julius Malema's wife says she wants him to retract that allegation that he made about domestic violence, he told the producer of the show, and I quote, "I'm not suing anyone, but I will simply provide evidence to back up the claims, and I have witnesses, and her sister is amongst those witnesses. So it seems he's not going to be backing down. He's not going to retract that statement, and he says he's going to give evidence. While the ANC, on the other hand, says they're looking at taking action because they're unhappy with how its MPs, particularly Boy Mamabolo, conducted himself in Parliament.
Hi, Clement. I don't blame drivers to protest against Uber, especially Taxify. Taxify, it really sucks. I have cars on Taxify and Uber as well, but Taxify, it's worse.
Yeah, so that's responding to that protest taking place amongst Uber drivers across Johannesburg. Cats in the CBD, you want to comment on that? Good afternoon.
Yes, how are you?
Sure, how's it?
Good, yeah, my comment, I'm a driver myself, but I realized that a lot of us drivers are actually not aware of the strike, first of all. But I think the most pertinent point is the fact that I really don't think that Uber and Taxify as organizations really have any power to do anything about the issues, because those issues are not issues that are happening where Taxify and Uber have actual influence. I think those issues need to be tabled to the transport department and perhaps the police and the metros.
And I think they've done that also, Katz. I mean, haven't Uber drivers met with the, even taxi drivers? I mean, you know, the Mexi taxi drivers met with the transport department. I think at some point there were meetings, but clearly they haven't found joy in that. Katz in the CBD, thank you so much for calling us.
702, SMS us now on 31702.
All right, so Cabinet has approved some important bills, including the Employment Equity Amendment Bill. It's now been sent to Parliament. The legislation will basically allow the Employment and Labour Minister to set transformation targets in the workplace. And that's because until now, government had no real targets. And remember, the Employment Equity Act only required quote-unquote reasonable progress in workplace transformation. And that's why we're sitting with a situation where every single year, the Commission for Employment Equity tells us the same thing, that there's a slow pace of transformation, especially in the middle and upper ranks. Remember, even last year, the Commission revealed in its annual report that there was still an overrepresentation of white people in top and senior management positions. And this is in all provinces. And the finance and business sectors were the worst in terms of affirmative action. Let's speak to the commissioner. We'll speak to the one of the commissioners at the Department of Labor, and they will chat to us about what this amendment is really going to mean for, you know, that desire and the need for transformation targets to be set, but also for transformation to be accelerated. But for now, let's focus on what the Competition Commission is doing, because they have this morning released their provisional report on the Public Passenger Transport Market Inquiry. And the Commission believes that there may be factors that prevent, distort, or even restrict competition within the sector. So there are public hearings currently underway where, you know, written and oral submissions will be obtained from various stakeholders. Tembin Kosini Bonakele is the commissioner at the Competition Commission. Temenkosi, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time. What's your provisional report telling you about the general state of competition in the passenger transport market sector?
So, I mean, the first thing is that we've now completed those public hearings you're referring to, right? And we've issued the provisional report for comment. And it will have a period of about a month from which people can comment. And the key findings really are that the subsidy formula for public transport leads to distortion of competition. So, for example, the subsidy for taxis,
yeah,
that ferry more than 66% of commuters,
mm,
is sitting at about 1%, which is the taxi recap.
Mm-hmm.
And rail, which transports less than 10% of the people, gets a subsidy of about 40%. So there are distortions there. There are also distortions in the sense that rail is only found in metropolitan areas by and large. So if this subsidy is targeted at rail, it means that people who live in peripheral towns,
yeah,
and rural areas, that tax subsidy doesn't touch them. So there is an inequity inherently there. We've also dealt with issues around subsidies and contracts given to bus operators. So provinces, for example, contract bus operators to service certain areas. These contracts have been in operation since at least 2000, and there has been no new entrance. There has been no change in the contracts. In other words, no new players have been able to come in, and that's because government has placed a moratorium on new contracts. So we're saying that also entrenches monopolies in these routes.
Yeah, and now there's going to be public hearings taking place. When do they start?
No, we've done public hearings already.
Okay.
Now what we need is the provisional report, comments on the provisional report.
Aha, so the comments, these are how people are going to be commenting now. It's on the provisional report that you have now published. All right. Thembinkosini Bonakele, Commissioner at the Competition Commission. I really appreciate your time.
702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
So, former Johannesburg Mayor Herman Mashaba has announced that he's in the process of forming his own private prosecutions team to deal with corruption cases in the country. Mashaba, remember, who resigned from the DA to form his own political party, says he was angry that there were thousands of corruption cases that were sitting idle without being prosecuted. Mr. Mashaba, good afternoon. Thanks for your time. How far are you with this process? I mean, you're going to need a lot of resources. Who are you talking to?
Well, Clement, thank you very much, and good afternoon to the listeners. Yes, absolutely, we're going to need the resources. But this, unfortunately, is a very important project for the country. Clement, for the last 20-odd years, we've been subjected to public looting of the public resources by politicians, starting from the days of the arms deal and nothing happening. On a daily basis, we are exposed to the Zondo Commission, where we are seeing the politician after the other working with some of people in the private sector. But we're not really seeing the consequences thereof. That's why when I launched the People's Dialogue, I wanted the feedback from civil society, from South Africans, to tell us what they want. What type of South Africa they want. And one of the issues that the South African people actually were very clear is they were looking for a political party that can obviously ensure that corruption is dealt with quite seriously. It is for that reason yesterday I announced the establishment of this unit to deal with these cases. And fortunate enough, Clement, as you are aware, there are many cases that are completed. Cases as clear as daylight that the National Prosecuting Authority has been sitting with for years without prosecuting. So we are going to be demanding this prosecution continue. If not, then they must give us no certificates for us to go for private prosecution. If not, then we'll take this matters to the courts.
Yeah, and Mr. Mashaba, I'm sure a lot of South Africans will share your sentiments about how unhappy you are about the level of corruption in the country and what appears to be the slow pace of prosecuting perpetrators. But we've had other organizations with their own private prosecuting arms, like AfriForum, for instance, but they haven't sent anyone to jail yet. How is your organization going to do things differently to speed up that process?
Watch out the space, Clement. You are aware I was the executive mayor of the city of Johannesburg. Just in the city of Johannesburg, cases that we over the last 3 years we've given to the, our law enforcement agencies to prosecute people who had stolen public money. Those cases, right. 3 years later, nothing is happening. We only hear from politicians that those cases have been withdrawn. So we've got cases that are ready for prosecution. So no work still needs to be done. It just we need a political will for, in fact, for the NPA to be freed from political interference, so that those politicians can be put in prison where they belong.
Mr. Hemen Mashaba, thank you so much for your time. The founder of the People's Dialogue.
Coming up,
the Azania Musaka Show on 702.
Know, live, transform.
This is 702.
For the curious.
All right, it's now 3 minutes before 1 o'clock. Before we wrap up the show, let's speak to Tembinkosi Mkhalipi, who's the Chief Director for Labor Relations at the Employment and Labor Department. Remember, I was telling you earlier about that important bill that has been approved by Cabinet, the Employment Equity Amendment Bill. It's now been sent to Parliament, and the legislation would basically allow the Employment and Labor Minister to set transformation targets in the workplace. Tembinkosi, thank you so much for speaking to us. How exactly is this amendment bill going to empower the Minister to accelerate transformation in the workplace?
The idea is that the Minister, instead of leaving to companies, must be able, in consultation, obviously, with the sector, set up sector targets in different sectors of the economy. And in that way, it's hoped that then it will enforce, it will fast track transformation.
What are the penalties going to be for non-transforming workplaces?
Well, the penalties are still the same as reported in the law. The turnover schedules that are there, and the next issue is that, remember, Section 53 of the law has never been promulgated. Now, Section 53 prevents companies that are not complying with the law to do business with government. And the intention is to go ahead and also promulgate that section which this sector target processes that will be embarking on.
Yeah, and I'm sure people will ask Tembinkosi why, you know, the penalties are still the same when they really haven't been effective, because many of the companies even budget for some of the penalties, especially when it comes in monetary form. But when you answer that question, please also explain to me how, you, as a department, you're going to be checking which companies are complying and which are not, when you don't even have enough inspectors. I mean, last year, we were told that there's only one inspector for 20 workplaces. How would that nip this high level of non-compliance in the bud?
Well, the way it's going to happen is that in terms of the sector target, when a target is set, let us say in the banking sector, we set a target for senior managers for 50% for the next 3 years. We say in the next 3 years, representativity should be 50%. Now, each company then will have to decide and say, how are they going to reach that 50% that we've set up for the next 3 years or 5 years, whatever the period is.
Okay.
Now, after the company has decided in their report, when they report, assuming that the parliament passed this bill this year, in their report in September, they are going to be indicating what's going to be the target for the next 12 months. How are they going to reach the 50% over 3 years? If they say they will take 20% in the first year, the report that will be issuing in the first year after this year, it will indicate whether they have already complied with the target.
All right. Tembinkosi Mkhalipi, thank you so much for your time. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Chief Director for Labor Relations at the Department of Employment and Labor Department.